Into the Night continues now.
That's what I like to hear.
Here's Tony Bruno and Harry Mays.
Joining us right now, ladies and gentlemen, one of the all-time greats in the industry. I haven't seen him in a while. Last time I saw him, I ran into him at Penn Station in New York trying to get on a train.
Yeah.
And there he was in the big crowd. Legendary broadcaster, 40 years at NBC, 8 National Sportscaster of the Year Awards, and no baseball even, and he's now with the MLB Network, so I don't know what he's doing these days. Bob, how are you, man?
I'm good, Tony. How are you?
We're hanging in there. You know, we've been hunkered down in our wine cellar for a couple of years, so we were well prepared for this pandemic before it even happened. So I've been doing shows, and now we're on Sirius XM, and so we're working while a lot of people aren't. So what's going on with you? Because obviously there's no MLB. There's MLB Network is on the air. But so what's happening? And baseball, of course, one probably I would say your first love all the years you've been around. How frustrating is this for you watching this whole thing keep going on and on and on?
Yeah, you know, it's not frustrating from the standpoint of not doing games. I've been around long enough so that it just becomes another year for me selfishly that falls in place with the 40-plus years that I've been around it. What's frustrating to me is seeing the damage they're doing to both the business and to people's feelings about the game itself. They can argue over all their various points, and we can debate, if we want to bore ourselves, what all those particular points are. But no matter who wins point A or point B at the negotiating table, it's a Pyrrhic victory if you damage the business in the meantime. I've taken to saying this is like a bitter divorce where they're arguing about who gets the sofa, who gets the silverware, and meantime the house is on fire. Table that and put out the fire. In 2020, with everything else that's going on in society and so many people adversely impacted, nobody wants to hear this stuff. We know they're going to have to roll up their sleeves and get down to a very serious long-term negotiation because the next CBA runs out after the 2021 season. But in the meantime, they have only damaged their mutual interest, which is to grow the business rather than to damage it. They've only damaged that mutual interest by this short-term bickering. Talk about not being able to see the forest for the trees. This is the perfect example of it. So that's what frustrates me more than anything else.
Yeah, you know, we talk to all the writers, all the top writers every day, and one day it looks like, oh, this is going to be the number they agree on. And then Tony Clark meets in Arizona, you know, with Rob Manfred. And it looks like, oh, this is going to be the day. And now here we are late on a Friday and still no news. And I know they shut down the offices for Juneteenth and many people aren't working. But is there a drop-dead date in your mind? Because I know there's still plenty of time and they could do it. But it seems to be that number. The number between 60 and 70 seems to be the biggest point here. And they can't nail that down.
Yeah, there may be a little give on the owner's side, but not much. It's going to be 65 or less. Closer to 60, my guess would be I'd put 65 as the over-under, and I'd bet the under somewhere between 60 and 65. Part of the reason why there may be a drop-dead date, getting them in, getting some form of spring and now summer training in before the games begin to count, is that they're anticipating the possibility of a coronavirus surge. Now, when I say that, I'm aware of the fact that it's already surging in some states, including key baseball states like Texas, Arizona, and Florida. But all the experts, their best educated guess is that when the weather begins to cool, that it could spike again. So baseball's idea is let's get this over by late September in terms of the regular season and get our expanded tournament in before that happens. So that's why I think their drop-dead date is sometime in the next few days so that they can begin playing games that will count around July 20th.
Hey, Bob, I know both sides are at fault. They both have a hand in this. But is there one more than the other that seems to be holding this thing back, in your view?
You know, I'm kind of in the pots on both their houses school. But I think the players in this case, as a group, not individual players, or their leadership. And there's some sort of internecine warfare going on there, battle for control of the Players Association. Powerful agents, their legal counsel, Tony Clark, who's going to actually run it, or whose vision will prevail, and how will that vision impact what they think is the bigger war, which is 2021 and 2022. But what I never understood, and I always thought this was true for years and years, way back when, Marvin Miller's days, the early days of Don Pier and Gene Orza, the players were right about everything and really were matters of principle. But long after it got to the point where it should have just been a tough business negotiation, but not a holy war, the players were still treating almost everything as if it was a holy war. And especially now, in 2020, the idea that anything the owners put forward was somehow a predicate for what was going to happen next year or the year beyond made no sense. Everything here should have just been viewed as a one-off. Are they going to play perpetually with no fans in the stands? Are they going to play beyond this year with teams only playing in their own time zone? It's all a one-off. So with that in mind, come to some sort of mutual agreement. Understand nobody wants to hear this, and it only damages the business. So I blame the players for that a little bit more than I blame the owners, a little.
Talking with Bob Costas, Hall of Fame broadcaster. And the other, you know, the other thing that people don't know about you, Bob, is that your children have won sports Emmys, too. You know, it's when you're a parent and you win multiple awards as a great broadcaster, and then to see your kids also win awards, that's got to be something that you're really, really proud of.
Yeah, Wikipedia kind of gets that a little bit wrong. My daughter is a school teacher. She's ninth grade English literature in New York when schools are open, and even now she's working at a distance virtually doing it. She's very dedicated to it. But the year she graduated from Boston College happened to be 2012, and the London Olympics loomed. And she said, Dad, I would like to just be able to say, like Keith, her brother, that I worked with you for at least a little bit. And so NBC put her to work on the news desk. She didn't really have that much contact with me on the news desk at the Olympics in 2012. And what happens, the networks are great about this, when they win for something overall, not individual awards, but the Olympics or the Super Bowl or something like that, wins an overall sports Emmy. They mint those Emmys for everyone involved. So Taylor Costas has one Emmy for that. Keith Costas, however, does work in the business. He's been with the Major League Baseball Network since shortly after its inception. And so when programs like MLB Tonight win studio Emmys, he's part of that program and he gets one of the Emmys.
Beautiful. Can you get an extra one from me so I can feel like I've won an Emmy in my lifetime? What other one? Never an Emmy. Bob Costas. Bob, now, so MLB Network has done a great job. I know baseball, we can all agree, baseball is your first love, right? I mean, this is the sport you grew up in. Even when you're in Syracuse and graduated in 73, your first job was doing what? Wasn't it doing the Syracuse minor league baseball team?
No. I did a few games of the Syracuse Chiefs just into a tape recorder like all the kids there did, just trying to figure out if we knew what we were doing. My first job was minor league hockey in the old Eastern Hockey League, the Syracuse Blazers, while I was still in school. And then I went to St. Louis to do the Spirits of St. Louis of the ABA. I actually never did any baseball. People just assumed I had. I'm one of the few guys who not only never did minor league baseball, I never really did local baseball except for a game or two here or there filling in for Jack Buck in St. Louis. All my baseball has been network baseball. I was actually learning it as I was doing it in the early 80s at NBC.
And I mentioned Syracuse, the Blazers there, play-by-play. And a good friend of ours who lives up in Ottawa sent me a little note about Goldie Goldthorpe, who was a rookie. I guess he was a 20-year-old rookie when you were doing the play-by-play up there for the Blazers, right? And you and he became friends, although he's one of those guys who had a really crazy past. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't he the guy that they based the movie Slapshot over, Goldie?
Yeah. Ogie Oglethorpe is Bill Goldie Goldthorpe.
Correct.
He's absolutely based on him. And you can take anybody you want, all the legendary enforcers in the NHL and in the minor league. I don't think anybody compares with Goldie, who cheerfully admits that he was arrested more than 40 times in his life, banned, not suspended, banned for life from six different leagues. You know, he's sort of an old-time hockey legend, and he was an angry young man at age 20 or 21 when playing for the Blazers. He was actually a more talented hockey player than some enforcers have been. He was a pretty darn good winger. He could skate. he could score, but he lived to fight. And that was kind of his deal. And early on, I guess he didn't find much use for me. We were about the same age, but my my ability to duke it out in a dark alley or a bar room did not compare with his. So I've told this story before. Forgive me if you've heard it, but the bus is rolling down the New York Thruway toward Long Island, where the Blazers were going to play the Long Island Ducks that night. And I'm reading the New York Times. That was my mistake in Goldie's eyes. And he's sitting behind me on the bus. He reaches over my shoulder. He rips the paper out of my hands. He stands up with great ceremony in the aisle of the bus, makes sure everybody's watching, and rips it to shreds and lets it fall on the floor of the bus like New Year's Eve confetti. I'm 21 years old and stupid, and I think, well, I can't let this pass. I have to say something. And I say, hey, don't be jealous, Goldie. I'll teach you to read. So this was not my smartest move because this did not sit well with him. So he grabs me by the collar and slams me up against the window of the moving bus. And then he reaches up into the rack above and pulls down a hacksaw, which players use to trim their sticks. Now, I knew he had no real intention of harming me, but he places the hacksaw beneath my chin. And I also knew that he wasn't the sort of guy who was aware enough to take into account all the possible dynamics. What if the bus hits a pothole, it swerves to avoid a deer in the road, and then maybe something unintended happens, and all of a sudden I'm decapitated. And out of the corner of my eye, I see this sort of makeshift SWAT team led by Butch Barber, who was the older brother of Bill Barber, who played for the Stanley Cup-winning Philadelphia Flyers in the 70s. And he was like the veteran player, one of the most respected players in the league. He'd been around a long time. And he's leading three or four veteran players cautiously from the front of the bus toward the back. And they're going, Goldie, Goldie, put the hacksaw down. Now put Bob down. So, okay. And I think that from that point on, it was a turning point. Because Goldie, in the back of his head, sort of respected that I stood up for myself. So now let's fast forward. I told this story like 25 years ago on Jay Leno's show. And he happened to be watching. And a few days later, he gets my number somehow, and he's on the phone. Hey, Bobby, that's a great story. We had a good time, didn't we? I always loved blah, blah, blah. Okay, so now, about a year ago, his memoir comes out, his autobiography. Guess who wrote the foreword?
You.
Yep.
That's exactly correct.
It was called The Real Ogie by Liam McGuire, right? Or Liam McCure.
That's it.
I'm sorry, Liam McCure.
That's not Liam McHugh. Liam McHugh's a guy at NBC.
I know that. Yeah. I know he wasn't. He's not even old enough to be around then. I don't think. Is
right.
He does
also the hockey guy though. Yeah. Huh? Liam
yes.
McHugh's a hockey guy.
Yeah. It's funny though because you know you and I are the exact. Actually, you're 2 years. You're 2 months older than me. So we both grew up in that era of the Broad Street Bullies. When and a lot of people don't know that about you, Bob. They only think baseball. But you know that was when hockey was. I mean, out of control. Yeah. But the fans loved it, especially here in Philly, where I grew up and live. It's just like that's the Mount Rushmore team of this city.
Old time hockey.
Oh, sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're still heroes in this city to this day.
Yeah, absolutely, they are. Yeah, I've done a little bit of everything. The Olympics, obviously, people associate me with that, and part of the NBA on NBC, and I did ABA games prior to that, and college basketball, Missouri games when I was at KMOX. In St. Louis, and a little bit of hockey, a little bit of horse racing, but baseball's always been my favorite.
Now, are you going to miss? I mean, tomorrow's the Belmont; it's running in reverse order. But of all the things you've done, and I know you did the Belmont, you did the Triple Crown races, as you mentioned, part of your repertoire. Did you like doing the horse racing, or was that just part of your job?
No, I really like doing it, especially the Kentucky Derby and the Belmont. If a Triple Crown was at stake, no disrespect to the Preakness, which is also good event. But the Kentucky Derby is really a slice of Americana. And I never tried to pass myself off as a horse racing expert. I learned more about it after doing, you know, all those derbies. I don't know how many I did, close to 20 of them, I guess, over the years. So I learned more about it. But my job was to paint the big picture and welcome the casual fans in. We had a slew of experts and they were really great and they knew what they were doing. So I never tried to pass myself off as a guy who memorized the racing form. But I thought the Derby itself was was really a great piece of Americana, and the way NBC did it, a great piece of television. We turned a two-minute race into a four-hour show that always got a very high rating. And it couldn't have gotten that rating if it was just people who really were horse racing aficionados. People just were intrigued by and enchanted by the event.
Well, Bob, having done the Spirits of St. Louis, I'd love to ask if you have a Marvin Barnes story, but I really want to get to what your thoughts on the National League instituting the designated hitter rule with whenever they get back to playing.
Well, in 2020, it makes sense, because one of the problems you're going to have is with pitching. They're going to have an abbreviated training period before they start. If you're looking to handicap things, and who knows for sure, but one thing almost all the experts are saying, it's the teams that have the greatest pitching depth that will fare the best in this abbreviated season, because you're going to see even more of a parade to the mound, because starters aren't going to be conditioned to go even as deep into the game as they're now expected to go. And there's always been a concern in interleague games about pitchers having to bat and run the bases, American League pitchers a concern about injuries. So I think it makes sense in 2020, but apparently the agreement they're now working on also includes universal DH in 2021, and if that is leading toward universal DH forevermore, you know, I can live with it. It's not the end of the world, but I prefer that that not be the case. I like the National League style, and I like the contrast. I like the American League with the DH and the National League without it. We know the additional elements of strategy that you get in the National League, and I also think it's interesting when the World Series comes around that you play with it in the American League part and without it in the National League part. And despite the fact that last year's World Series saw the road team win all seven games, generally speaking, you would think that should confer a little bit of an advantage on the home team.
Last thing about baseball for me, Bob, and is baseball doesn't have the bubble thing. We had stories now down in Florida where the Phillies in Clearwater had five ball players test positive for COVID, three staff members. The Toronto Blue Jays in nearby Dunedin are reporting some symptoms. And now you got even the hockey players down there with the Tampa Bay Lightning have closed their camp because of the concerns about the COVID spreading again. Is baseball going to be able to get through that as well when they don't even have an agreement and figure out how to do this without the bubble? You know, because NBA is going to be in a bubble. And we've seen these other sports, but baseball doesn't have any of this stuff laid out.
No, it's always going to be a very difficult needle to thread. Even under the best of circumstances, with the most capable and careful planning, the best possible protocols, the best intentions, leaving all the bickering and the labor aspects aside, it was always going to be a tough needle to thread. And the best they can do is cross their fingers and hope that they don't get derailed. But that has always been a possibility, that they'd start and then have to stop.
Last thing, Bob, and that is, will they play? I mean, we're all guessing here. Is there any way the group of owners who are against this, and there were reports that up to eight owners that didn't care whether the season or actually didn't want the season to happen. Do you buy that, and you think there'll be one owner who steps up and says, hey, guys, let's get this thing done?
I think that there are now fewer than eight would stand in the way, especially if the number is going to be around 60, because at 60, or something very close to it, prorated as the players had demanded, the actual amount of money that the owners would expend on salaries is right around $1.5 billion, which is basically how much the outlay would have been under their other plans that didn't include full prorating. So I think that almost all the owners would be comfortable with that. Almost all the owners can be convinced that the damage to the game of not playing at all, beyond the damage that's already been done, isn't worth it. You're right that some owners would say, look, I do better just shutting the whole thing down. Don't have to pay any salaries. Don't have to pay anybody. Obviously, you don't have as much in terms of ushers and ancillary personnel, but you have some, even without fans in the stands. There are some owners who would say, I'd do better just to call it quits and look toward 2021, but not enough to derail it, I don't think.
And the St. Louis owner is one that has been mentioned by people, and you know St. Louis better than anybody, except maybe Joe Buck. And that is the St. Louis ownership group, which is considered the best area for baseball in this country, one of the factions that doesn't want baseball and thinks it'd be better without it?
No, I think they're on board with something close to what Manfred has proposed. Bill DeWitt, as you know, his family, it goes way, way back. It goes back generations and generations in baseball, the DeWitt family. I think he would like a mulligan on that one. I think what he meant was that it's not always profitable for every team on a year-to-year cash flow basis. But the Cardinals are not one of those teams. The Cardinals are a profitable team on an annual basis. And almost all teams, if you look at the equity and the resale value, you can't make a case that baseball is not a good business. And in the midst of all this, they come out with a much more lucrative deal from Turner Sports right in the middle of all this. And there's also an expansion looming eventually, and so they can recoup some of their losses with the substantial expansion fees from two more franchises being added and the existing 30 teams which share in that multi-billion dollar windfall. So I don't think, you know, Bill DeWitt is a good guy, and he's been around the sport for his entire life. I don't think he meant that the way it came out.
Bob Costas. Bob, it's great to catch up. Really appreciate you coming on and giving us the latest on what's going on and your expertise, especially when it comes to baseball.
Well, yeah, I just want to ask, you have a pick for the Belmont tomorrow.
Oh, that's right.
Is there a horse you like?
Yeah, I like Gumleg. Gumleg in the fourth.
Come on, Bob. We're looking for superfecta action here. We've been waiting for a long time for a legit. I mean, there's been horse racing going on, but I don't want to bet like the eighth race at Parks or, you know, Belmont during the middle of the week. I'm not that desperate.
You know, here's my question. First of all, I'm pleading complete ignorance here. This is now Mike Tirico's opportunity and problem. Let him know all this stuff. But here's another Syracuse lad, so I'm very proud of him. He was the recipient of the first Bob Costas Scholarship at Syracuse in 1987. I went up to Syracuse to meet him just to make sure that the guy who was getting the inaugural scholarship wasn't a knucklehead, and he turned out to be one of the most talented people who ever came out of there. So it's all good. But here's my question. When you talk about, hey, give me a tip. When you go to the racetrack, not necessarily on Derby Day, but just, you know, on a normal day, you go to the racetrack, these guys who are touts always have holes in the soles of their shoes. They're wearing, like, polyester clothes from 1978. If they know so much, why are they so bad off?
That's good, a good question.
Point.
But they always smoke good cigars, though, at least. I mean, that's the best part. They always have decent cigars.
They look like Stubby K from Guys and Dolls.
You know, it's been a run.
Nice reference, Grandpa Bob.
Yeah, there you go.
It's been a run on Syracuse. Jeff Passan, Andrew Siciliano. We had Mike Tirico on last week. We just can't get rid of you, Syracuse guys. You basically dominate the entire broadcast industry.
That's pretty much true.
Bob, thanks again.
And we're damn happy about it.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yes,
Bob,
sir.
Thank you so much. Appreciate
thanks, Bob.
The time. Thanks.
All right, Tony. Thank you, guys. Have a good weekend.
There
Bye.
He is, the great Bob Costas. How about that?
Yeah.
I love talking to legendary people in this industry.
Yeah, and he brought up expansion at the end. You think about that, Major League Baseball expanding two more teams.
I've seen enough, Harry, and I've heard enough.
Wow.
We're going to come back. We're going to talk some golf, get an update on that. Robin doesn't have a Florida update today,
I
Robin.
I don't. The ones that I pulled up, we kind of already talked about.
Yeah.
There's really nothing new and exciting
Let's
happening.
Let's give Florida a break for one
well,
day.
Well, they're getting the COVID down.
Yeah,
there's
I know.
A lot
we
of spikes. So.
Exactly. We don't want to talk about
and
it during the spike.
We maybe have an update on the Jim Rome Smackoff winner.
Yes.
Okay.
And we have Dean from Loud Bags with an update about the bag giveaway, I believe.
Oh, yes.
He's on the line. We'll talk to him next. You could win one of those beautiful Merck golf bags like Harry Mays and I have. We'll tell you how next. Stick around.